You notice I'm from Colorado, so I put snow scene in front of you there. We left Colorado, it was 20 degrees, and I looked at the weather report, and it's supposed to be 70 to 80 degrees here, so I'm glad we're here. It's warmer here. Thank you so much for inviting our team here. We're excited to be here. There's something different about Texas. I know it's bigger. But there's something about the friendliness of Texas that is different. I've noticed that since we've been here. So thank you for being friendly and for inviting us here and being a part of this seminar. I'd like to just introduce two books that you see on the book table, which we'll be focusing on this evening. The first is Biblical Concepts Counseling Workbook. We're going to be defining a number of different spiritual problems that people struggle with in their personal life. And this book outlines those problems and how to resolve them. We're going to be talking about that later this evening. The second is Caring for the Emotionally Damaged Heart. And this book defines 21 different emotional pain issues people experience in their life and how to pray to resolve those issues. So I want you to notice these books because we're going to make reference to charts in these books tonight. And if you'd like to purchase them, they'll be available on the back table. My wife will be there. I'd like for you to take your outline that you see in your bulletin. It's this Caring for the Heart little brochure. And we're going to be talking about 12 reasons why people can't love. On the back is the outline. And a little bit later on, we'll be following that outline if you'd like to follow along. I noticed something about your church, and I've been listening the last couple days since we got here. Your church has done a good job of evangelism. You've led people to Christ in the community, and I'm excited about that. When I look on the walls, I see all these plaques of missionaries that you support. You've been involved in missions, sharing the gospel around the world, and I'm excited about that. You're a church that teaches God's word, and I'm excited about that. I'd like to introduce you to what I believe is a fourth responsibility of the church, and that is to understand and care about people's hearts. People struggle with issues inside their hearts, and often when people struggle, they don't know where to go with their issues. And I would like in this week to challenge you as a church to be committed to understanding what people struggle with in their hearts and to help them, lead them to Jesus, to the answer to that problem. Often we refer people who struggle with issues to professionals, and those professionals merely talk with them but never really get to the core of their emotional pain inside their heart. What I've noticed over the years is every person struggles with some form of emotional pain in their past. Living in a sinful world, we all experience difficulties in our lives. Some of you came from broken homes and your father left the home and your mother raised you. And you long for that father that never was there. Some of you came from angry homes where your father was angry and critical and it damaged your heart, and you struggle anytime someone's angry or critical of you. Others of you came from homes where you were rejected. Your brother was accepted. He was older, but you were never accepted as a person, and you struggle with that. Others of you struggle with depression, where emotionally the pains in your life have weighed down on your life, and you struggle in your personal life with depression and you don't know how to resolve it. I share these examples because every person has what I'm going to call this week a core emotional pain issue. My wife and I were involved for 23 years in pastoral ministry and the last 16 years in full-time counseling ministry. And I have the opportunity every week in my office of sitting with two couples every week. I thought there were couples out there that had it all together, that were perfect, but I found that I never found any. Every couple struggles with something inside in their relationship, and every individual struggles with issues. None of us are perfect. But the wonderful thing is we can know Jesus Christ and we can have a relationship with Him, and He can begin a work in our lives not only of maturing us, but of resolving those deep emotional pain issues that come in our lives. And this week we're going to talk about different kinds of issues people struggle with, and how do we actually resolve those through prayer and through the enabling power of the Lord Jesus Christ in our life. Every problem is solvable. And God desires to meet those emotional issues in our heart and care for our heart. So the first thing I'd like to identify this morning is every person has a core emotional pain issue. But there's a second thing I'd like to mention. Every person has a core emotional need. If you would turn to your wife today, if you're married, and ask, put in one word what you want that would make you the happiest girl in the world, she could define that word. If you were to ask your husband, put in one word what he needs from you, he might have to think because no one's ever asked them that before, but he could define what he needs from you. You can ask any child, many of you have children, you can ask any child, what do you need from me? And that child will be able to define that emotional need. And I've come to find out that every person has one core emotional need. Everyone's is different. Everyone's pain is different. May I suggest that in order to find what's going on inside of a person's heart, we need to focus on a person's heart, not on their mind, their intellectual part of them. Often when we talk with people, we talk intellectually to them. How are you doing? Everybody's doing fine. That's intellectual. That's head. But when you focus on a person's heart and you ask them what's happening inside, you get a different story. I spend 15 hours in my office with an individual couple every week, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And I always begin the week by asking them, will you tell me about your marriage? Will you tell me about the family you grew up in? And every week, I always hear the same story. I came from a neat family. My dad was a great guy. My mom was really neat. She loved me very much. And then on Wednesday, I hear a different story. I struggle because my mom is a perfectionist, and she was critical if I didn't do things perfect. And I emotionally just quit because I couldn't meet her expectations. Or a guy will say on Monday, I had a great father. He went fishing with me all the time. And on Wednesday, I hear the fact that he was so angry and I could never trust him. And I just couldn't wait to get away from home. The difference is on Monday, I'm hearing an intellectual statement about their family. But by Wednesday, I'm hearing something that's different in their heart where they've been hurt. Now, in order to resolve issues, we have to focus on the heart of a person, because every person struggles with issues, and we want to ask the question, what is that person struggling with? How can we spiritually resolve the issue in their heart that damages their heart? What we want to do is care about people's hearts. We want to understand them. And we want to resolve the issues that are locked within a person's heart. Now you say, what is this week all about? It's about understanding the things people struggle with. Some people struggle with depression. How do we take a depressed person and identify why they're depressed and then lead them in a prayer to resolve that pain inside their heart? I was depressed for 20 years from age 15 to 35 until I understood the cause of my depression. I came to freedom. That's actually why I left the pastoral ministry and went into full-time counseling, because I saw so many depressed people and they didn't know how to resolve the issues. By the way, it doesn't do any good to say to a depressed person, why don't you just quit being depressed? That criticism actually makes them more depressed. No, you have to understand the cause of that depression and help them resolve it. Now, we're going to spend one evening this week focusing on depression. That's on Monday evening. There are other people that struggle with anger. They can't understand why every time their son doesn't pick up his toys on the way he's supposed to pick up his toys, the dad gets angry and yells and slaps. They don't understand why. What we have to do is understand what's the issue and then find out what's the cause. And then we have to lead a person in a prayer to actually resolve the problem that they're struggling with inside. 90% of what we struggle with as adults is tied to childhood pain. So if I'm looking at a person that's depressed or angry or has a moral failure issue, 90% of the time, the cause of those issues is before 18. 70% of everything we become in life is locked in by age 6. Now, when you think about that, if a person is angry as an adult, I often want to ask the question, what happened to that person before 6 that would make them an angry person? Or a depressed person? Or a person that's addicted to moral issues in his or her life? Now, having the assumption that everybody has a problem, unless you're from Texas, Texas people don't seem to have any problems. I guess we'll find out this week when we start counseling to see if Texas is the same as any other state. But no, everyone has a problem and everyone struggles with something in their life. I have the privilege of reaching into the heart of a person, identifying what they're struggling with, and I have the privilege of leading them to Jesus, who can bring healing and peace to every issue inside of a person's heart. I have the privilege of taking people who were sexually abused, who've hid that secret for 38 years, and lead them to Jesus to find peace in their heart for the first time when they've struggled all of their life with their problems. I have the privilege of taking people who have been physically and emotionally damaged and lead them to Jesus to find peace with the issue in their heart. And it's neat to see, by the way, these couples that have come all the way from Arizona and California come because they care about people. And they came to my office at one point for training, came to freedom in their personal lives and marriage, and now all they're doing is helping people come to freedom like I've enjoyed doing for the last 16 years. Why do we care about people's hearts? Often the problems people have keep them from growing spiritually. And the problems that they struggle with inside cause them to struggle with issues in their lives. Some people, because of the damage in their hearts, can't read the Bible, because there's so much pain inside. Some people can't pray. Well, they're believers. They come to church every Sunday. But there's so much pain inside their heart that they can't pray because of the damage that has happened in their heart. But once that pain gets free, they don't have any problem praying. They don't have any problem reading the Word of God. This morning, I'd like to focus on a specific topic. Why is it not possible for a man to love his wife? Why is it not possible for a woman, a wife, to love her husband? And I'm going to share 12 reasons why men lock up and they block their emotions from their wife. I sit in my office every week with couples. That's what I do for my occupation now. And I ask a husband to look at his wife, and I have him ask her, have you ever felt loved from me? It's an interesting question. I have wives who say, no, I've never been loved a day in my life. My husband's been married to her for 50 years. I had one gentleman who came in. He had been married 50 years. They were celebrating their 50th anniversary the week they came into my office, and I asked him, why are you here? And he says, well, I don't have a problem. We have a great marriage. It's my brother. He's coming 6 weeks from now. And if I didn't come this week, he wouldn't come 6 weeks from now. So he's got the problem. We don't have a problem. Now, I always get excited about that because that means I get a vacation that week. I don't have to work. Until I looked at his test, he was 99% angry, 99% dominant. His wife was on the other side of dominance, 5% dominant. So I checked to see if he had any problems. So I had him look at his wife and say, have you ever been allowed in 50 years to make a decision in our marriage? You know, he's dominant, she's submissive. And she says, no, I've never made a decision in 50 years. Does that bother you? And she burst into tears. Then I noticed that his sympathy score was at 1%, and she was sympathetic at 90%. So I ask another question. Did you ever feel love from me? And the wife burst into tears again. She had never felt loved one day in 50 years. What if I resolved the issues in my life and I began to care about your heart for the first time in 50 years? What would you do with me? And the wife didn't know what to answer. And then she made a statement. She says, the only time you've cared about me is the last year when I had a stroke and I couldn't move my left side. It was paralyzed. And you did everything for me. That's as close to love as you've ever gotten in 50 years. I was shocked. This man didn't have any problems. Now, he wasn't from Texas. I won't tell you where he is from. Another state north of here. But it's interesting. Here was a man who didn't know he had a problem, and he never took the time to meet his wife's emotional needs. Now, it's one thing to talk intellectually to a person. It's another thing to talk focused on their heart. Now, my wife and I celebrated last August our 43rd wedding anniversary. The first 30 years, I didn't understand my wife's heart. My wife came from a home where her mother's attention and her parents' attention went to four brothers. She was the only girl. Her mother never gave her attention. So my wife and I met in Bible college, and she married a preacher. Now, preachers are perfect, I wish. But I had a depression problem. When I was depressed, I was focused on my pain. I was a disciplined person, so I worked hard. And I only had two gears to my transmission. I was either depressed, D1 was depressed, D2 was driven. Now, if I was driven, I was working for the church. If I was depressed, I was focused on my pain. Both of those problems never gave my wife the attention she needed. So the first 10 years, about every 2 months, she would cry when we went to bed. And I would ask her, what's wrong? And she would say, you love everybody else. You don't love me. And I would argue with her and say, no, I love you. She says, but you never spend any time with me. After the first 10 years, I read a book, 101 Ways to Love Your Wife, and I understood you had to bring her flowers. So I brought her flowers, and I took her on dates every Friday night. She quit crying. I thought, well, I solved my problem. So for 20 years, I did those things, spent a lot of money. But I didn't realize that my wife didn't want flowers. She didn't want a meal, because when we ate out, we only talked about the church and our children. I didn't know that my wife had an emotional need in her heart to be loved. I didn't understand that, because everything about our relationship was intellectual. I didn't know that there was a heart, a girl's heart, that I needed to care about. So for the last 13 years, I've had the privilege of focusing on my wife's heart. It's totally changed our marriage, because I have the opportunity of understanding what's going on inside my wife's heart. I've observed something. And that is the fact that people have difficulty knowing how to love, knowing how to care. I'd like for you to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the first three verses. And I'm just going to define a couple verses, and then we're going to focus on why is it that people can't love. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 1, it says, "Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become a sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal." What he's talking about here is if I had the ability to speak in every known language, sometime I wish I knew how to speak Spanish or French, because some of the books that I've written are translated in those languages and I can't speak them. I'm lost. But what if I had the ability to speak in every known language but did not show love? The first verse says that it's nothing more than making noise. There's no value to it if you don't love. In the second verse, it says, "And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing." In other words, if I had the ability to preach effectively and knew everything there was to know, and I had all faith that I could even move Pikes Peak if I wanted to, but had not love or charity, I produce nothing of value. I often wonder how many sermons I preached that were a big fat zero because I didn't love the people I was preaching to. You see, you can have the ability to do all kinds of things, but what Paul is saying is if that sermon is not couched in love, where you're concerned and cared about the hearts of people, it's ineffective. The third verse, "And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor and give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profits me nothing." In other words, I can give my life and death. I can give everything away I possess. A lot of people have done that. But if I haven't done it in love, there's no profit in it. What's Paul saying here? Paul is emphasizing the fact that everything that we need to do needs to be focused to love and care about people and understand what's happening in people's lives. And as I began caring about people in my office, I began to realize that people struggle with issues I didn't even know they struggled with. I struggled with issues that nobody understood. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8, it says, "And above all things, have a fervent charity among yourselves, for charity shall cover the multitude of sins." Love changes people's lives. Because when you love a person and you seek to understand and accept what's going on inside and you start caring about their hearts, all of a sudden their heart begins to open and you start seeing things inside that you didn't know existed there. I love to take a depressed person and take 15 hours to understand what's happening inside that person and care about the pain they experienced. Reuben Troyer is here from Ohio, a friend in an Amish culture. And there's a lot of depression in that culture, and we just had a seminar there 3 weeks ago. And I remember an Amish lady and her husband who came in, and she was depressed at 99%. And I began to understand what was going on inside and began to understand why she was depressed. And I began to lead her in a prayer to disconnect the four reasons why her heart had been damaged. And after 4 hours of counseling, all of a sudden she started smiling. She started giggling just like a little girl. She was 50 years of age. She wasn't a little girl anymore. She had lost her depression. And she felt joy in her heart, because Jesus had healed that pain within her heart. I love to do that. But it takes understanding and love. It takes some patience to understand what's happening inside of a person. How do we love? How do we connect? How do we care about each other's hearts? Individuals in a marriage often are struggling because a husband doesn't know how to love. He doesn't know how to connect. He doesn't know how to care about his wife's emotional needs. It's amazing that we can spend 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years married and never know how to love. I ask a question every week in my office. I have a husband look at his wife and say, "Have you ever felt loved?" I have a wife say to the husband, "Have you ever felt loved?" And it's amazing how often I get the word, "No, I've never felt loved a day in my life. I've always been rejected. No one's ever wanted me. No one's ever cared about my heart." Now, in a marriage relationship, I always check four things. Can a husband love his wife? Can a wife take that love in and feel it? Can a wife love her husband? Can a husband take it in and feel love? Now, we can talk about love, but the question is, does love penetrate where our heart is, and can we really feel that love inside and resolve those issues? When we look at marriage, there's three kinds of marriage relationships. There are couples that endure being married together. We're married, can't stand it. Sometimes we sleep in separate beds. Sometimes we can't even stand being in the same room, but we're married and we're not going to get divorced. Okay, that's a marriage where two people endure each other. Second kind of marriage is where people try and escape from each other through divorce, through separation. Sometimes I have husbands sleeping in the basement and wives sleeping upstairs, or wives sleeping with her children and lock the door so the husband can't get in. I have had all those things. Okay, why? People want to escape marriage because there are issues. In every marriage, the husband will step on the wife's pain and the wife will step on the husband's pain, and most of those pain issues are tied to issues before 18. Now, as you go through the week with us, we're going to define that more clearly. So if a husband can't deal with anger and criticism and the wife was never loved and feels neglected, the wife's going to feel neglected, get angry with the husband. The husband's going to pull away because the wife is angry and critical, causing him to pull away further. And it's a vicious cycle in a marriage. What I have to do in my office is I have to reverse that and get couples to understand each other's pain and connect. Every marriage problem is resolvable. All I need is for two people to say, "I'm willing to work on my side of the issue in order to resolve the issue." The third kind of marriage is a marriage where two people enjoy being together. It's interesting, every week, if a couple cooperates to understand their emotional and spiritual issues and resolve it, they'll come on a honeymoon at the end of the week and they can't stand to be apart. It's really interesting to watch. I have wheels on the chairs in my office. And on Monday, the chairs are way off to the outside. And often a wife can't even look at her husband. A husband can't stand his wife. And a husband says, "Fix her." So it's my job. I have to fix her, whatever problem is. But as the issues begin to resolve, all of a sudden I see him touching her. And I see her slipping her chair over to him. And I always know when I'm within the last one or two issues, all of a sudden, they wish those sides on those chairs were gone because they can't get close enough. And the chairs are pushing toward each other and they can't be apart. Why? Because God created a husband and wife. Whenever those issues are resolved inside a person's heart, they want to touch, they want to connect, they want to care, they want to connect with each other. And that happens with every couple. I don't care what their problem is. And it's interesting to watch that. In the past, I would share with husbands the six things God says they ought to do toward their wife. A husband is to sacrificially love his wife, to nourish, cherish, honor, to dwell with his wife according to knowledge, which means to take his wife into every area of his life. A husband is to cleanse his wife. But often husbands couldn't do that because there was pride inside, it's all about me. There's moral failure where he couldn't love his wife. Pornography. Or there was bitterness toward his mother for controlling him, and he married a controlling wife and he can't stand her, and so he puts a wall up and blocks her. He can't demonstrate these six things. But if he resolves each of the emotional and spiritual issues, which we're going to define this week, what happens is his heart can begin to open and he can begin to respond to demonstrate these qualities. There are five qualities God desires for women to demonstrate toward their husbands. The first is that older women are to teach younger women to love their wives, their husbands. It's the term phileo love. It's different than agape, that husbands are to love their wives. But this is a responding kind of love. They're to respect their husbands. They're to submit to their husbands with a gentle, meek, quiet spirit. But often I hear wives say, I don't want to listen to my husband. He has dominated everything in our lives and I can't stand him. Anytime a woman reacts to submission, it's because of pain from her father or from her husband that's been demonstrated, where her heart has been locked. But if you resolve the emotional and spiritual issues inside a wife's heart, she can begin to open and respond the way God designed. Emotional intimacy is essential if a couple is to experience the oneness God designed. But few couples are open with each other because of the issues that are locked inside their heart. And emotional intimacy is possible if those issues are resolved and their hearts have been dealt with those issues and brought to freedom. I'd like to share 12 reasons men can't love and women can't respond. And I'm just going to summarize, because this week we're going to be dealing with a lot of these issues, and this morning is just a summary of what we're going to be talking about through the week. The first is what I call a hostile, locked heart. This is a person with unresolved anger inside. And that unresolved anger causes them to put a wall up to people because they're reacting to what other people are doing to them, and they can't ever trust their heart because of the anger inside. I'll never forget a trucker from Iowa who came into my office. He was 53 years of age. His three children encouraged him to leave his wife because of his anger, and they were scared she was going to be damaged as their mother. So he left his wife and rented an apartment. A year later, he and his wife came into my office, and I looked at his test. He was 99% angry. And when I went to find the cause of his anger, I found out that his mother had been a dominant person. And 90% of the time, we marry our worst parent unless you resolve your issues before you start dating. Well, he had a dominant mother. He married a dominant wife. Every time his wife told him something to do or was critical of him, he would go into this rage situation. He called his mother the drill sergeant. Couldn't stand women. Couldn't stand his wife. Couldn't stand his mother. And emotionally, he was locked until I took the time to resolve the bitterness in his heart and helped him resolve the pain that his mother had caused him. As soon as I did that, his heart opened to his wife and he began to care about her. That was 8 years ago. He's still caring because I get a note from his wife every few months saying, my husband's still free, haven't seen his anger. And I begin to realize here's a man who came to freedom from his hostility. The second is a defiant, locked heart. A defiant, locked heart is a person who's rebellious. No one's going to tell me what to do. Now, can you imagine a guy getting married and he can't stand his parents telling him what to do? So he's rebellious toward his parents, and he marries a girl who's rebelling toward her parents. So you have two defiant people getting married. As soon as they get married, their relationship with their parents cuts off. They don't have to do what they say anymore. But within 2 weeks, that defiance is going to be turned into each other, so the guy will not allow his wife to tell him what to do. The wife will not let the guy tell him what to do, and they have to be independent for the next 60 years being married. Now, that's what defiance does. That's why it's very important to resolve defiance before you get married, because it will shut down communication faster than anything else. On Thursday, we're going to have an hour of how do you prepare for marriage, in which we're going to talk about the things that need to be resolved before marriage, and defiance is one of those issues, because you can never connect in a relationship as long as two people say, no one's going to tell me what to do. Because in a marriage, two people have to decide together what to do every day for 60 years. But if two people are reacting, you're going to have two independent people married to each other. The third is a neglected, locked heart. Now this week you're going to find out there are two kinds of problems. There are problems where other people have damaged you because they've done something to hurt you. You had an angry father, you had a critical mother. Those were things done against you. But there's a second kind of a problem, and that's when you didn't receive something you should have received. Like a child's neglected, nobody talks to the child in the home. Nobody values the child. Nobody cherishes that child. That child's going to grow up feeling neglected, like nobody loves them. And that is also a problem. I've noticed that when a girl, for example, is 4 years of age and her daddy divorces her mother and leaves the home, that girl will always react whenever, later on in life, when she's married, the husband threatens to leave, she will emotionally go crazy inside because of that pain of being emotionally neglected. Because when one or both of the parents leave a child, there's always the pain of neglect inside, which creates pain. Tonight we're going to talk about the emotional areas. There's 12 of them where people are damaged, and neglect is one of them. The fourth reason people can't love is because they're self-focused on themselves. We call this pride. For some reason, people say Texas has a little extra amount of this. I don't know if that's true or not. I guess you'll have to be the judge to that. Texans have more pride. Is that true? You have to tell me that. But a person who's focused on themselves doesn't notice anybody else. Everything's about them. So if you have a husband who's focused on himself, a wife gets nothing. If a husband is humble and focused on his wife, she gets attention. But if he's focused on himself and what he's doing, there's no connection. So self-focus actually leads to a lock in a relationship. 1 Corinthians 13:5 says, love is not self-seeking. Love focuses on another person to care about them. But pride or self-focus causes a person not to be able to love. The fifth reason why people can't love is because they've been damaged, they've been rejected. And they're so focused on their pain, they don't notice anyone else. I shared the fact that I was depressed. When I was depressed, I could feel my pain, but I couldn't give attention to my wife, and I couldn't connect to our four children because of that pain. A depressed person or a person who's been rejected has a lot of emotional pain inside, thinks about themselves or focused on themselves, and they can't love because of that pain. Now, one of the problems that we'll talk about this week is if you have a husband who's depressed, focused on his pain, a wife who's depressed, focused on her pain, those two people can't connect with each other. And they can't love their children until that pain is resolved. Now, if the husband's pain is resolved and the wife's pain is resolved, they can begin to connect, to care about each other. But I call this a rejected, locked heart. The sixth locked heart is what I call a morally locked heart. It's a person who's addicted to pornography or lust or homosexual thoughts. And this week, I'm really excited because I have some new material I'm going to be sharing that's new within the last couple months, in which I'm going to identify how to actually resolve homosexual addictions or pornographic addictions. And it's a very simple three-step spiritual process to actually take that away. And I had the privilege of meeting with three men homosexually addicted, one 23 years, one 30 years, where they had no desire for their wife. And I walked them through this three-step process. And when they got to the end of the 15 hours, they desired their wives for the first time in 30 years, which was amazing to me. But God changed the hearts of those men. And I'm really excited about, and I'm going to be sharing that this week. Actually, it's on Tuesday evening. Anyone who has a moral addiction can't love a spouse or her spouse more than 3%. They can't connect because that moral failure issue locks them where they can't care. The seventh is what I call an intellectual locked heart or an emotionally detached person. It's interesting how many people don't have any concept of how to emotionally connect. They're intellectually focused. If you ask them information, they can communicate it, but they can't connect in their heart. This evening, you're going to hear a testimony of a couple where he, for 32 years, didn't understand how to connect with his wife because he was intellectually locked and he couldn't connect. And they're going to share their testimony of how that changed. There are four reasons why people can't connect that are emotionally detached. Either their parents were emotionally detached, or secondly, they've experienced enough pain where they've detached from their emotions. Like this happens when a person is in the military and you're put under a lot of pressure. In a war situation, those individuals often come home totally emotionally detached from their emotions. They can't feel anything. If you're raised in a home where there's a lot of anger and criticism and a child's thrown across the room, often they make a statement, "No one is ever going to hurt me," and they shut their emotions down and their sympathy score will be 1%. Thirdly, you can train a person to detach. Medical doctors, 90%. Are detached because in training they're taught to detach so they won't feel pain when they're working with their clients. In the military, boot camp is designed to knock out your emotions. That's why they curse at you, they put you down. If you start crying, they go after you stronger until you stop crying. The only problem is you shut off your emotions, so when you go home you can't connect with your wife or husband. And then there's a fourth one, which we'll talk about later in the week. The next cause of why people can't love is what I call a defile-locked heart. This is a person who's been sexually abused. We were in another conference in North Carolina, and a man came to the session, and I encouraged people to draw a picture of their heart damaged. And he drew a picture of his heart with a whole bunch of garbage bags full of trash. And all of his life, he had stuffed his pain away in garbage bags, and he'd never dealt with one thing in his life. He came from an abusive home where his mother died, and he was put in a lot of different homes, and he was sexually abused. And he hid that secret for 38 years, and he could never open his heart to his wife until he prayed to resolve that. A defile-locked heart. We'll be sharing testimonies of people who came to freedom from sexual abuse this week. The ninth reason people can't love is what I call a dominant locked heart. This is a person who has to control, and usually it's out of pain. It's a very dominant person. They make all the decisions, and they don't care about another person. Everything is focused on them and their decisions. And often a dominant person is dominant because of emotional pain within the heart that's damaged them. The tenth reason people can't love is a driven locked heart. This is a person who's very self-disciplined, who works till 11:30 every night, has a perfect home, everything is just done right. Some of you probably fit in that category. They can do, but they can't connect emotionally. So they have perfect homes, but they don't know how to emotionally connect. Now, you can inherit that. Sometimes it's because you're covering pain, where if you keep working, you don't have pain. And emotionally, it keeps a person from emotionally connecting. The 11th is a spiritually locked heart. This is a person who's been damaged spiritually, where they no longer can pray, they can't read the Bible. When truth is communicated without love, often a person blocks Jesus and stops praying, stops reading the Bible. I've had numerous people in my office, and I ask them, can you pray? And they say, no, I stopped praying when I was 12 because of what happened to me. I ask other people, do you read the Bible? And they say, I can read the Bible, but I don't get anything. Doesn't minister to me. And whenever that happens, I know something has been damaged inside their heart. Someone has taken God's truth and damaged their heart with it. And when I lead them in a prayer to disconnect that, what happens is they start responding. I was in a Baptist church in Wichita, Kansas, and a deacon's wife was in the training day that we had, and she came to her husband at the end and says, I don't know if I agree with John Regeer. I don't think I can be free. She says, I haven't prayed for years. I can't read the Bible. I'm just locked up tighter than a knot. And her husband says, well, we haven't done what he said. Maybe we should do what he said. And so at 4 in the afternoon, before she made the evening meal, he says, why don't we just pray? And he led her in a prayer like I suggested. And that night she prayed nonstop. She couldn't stop praying. And she started reading the Bible, and all of a sudden, she could respond to God in the Word. She came that evening, and my wife and I were getting out of our vehicle, going in to set up for the seminar, and she ran across the parking lot, and she says, it works, it works, it works. I said, what works? I didn't know who she was. And she says, my husband led me in a prayer. Now I can pray. Now I can read the Word. She says, I was locked up because of what happened when I was a child. That's spiritually abused, spiritually locked. The 12th is what I call a judgmental locked heart. It's a person who is critical of others, attacks others, and locks their hearts. Often I have a husband who's critical of his wife. Everything she does is wrong. Or I have a wife who's critical of her husband. And emotionally that locks a heart and builds a wall so couples can't connect with each other. I call this a judgmental locked heart, criticism, where you have to correct someone and emotionally locks them up. I'll never forget a man who came into my office, and they'd been married 30 years and he reminded his wife she needed to brush her teeth every morning. Don't forget your books. She was a school teacher. Now, I asked him, how many years does your wife have to live before you don't have to tell her what to do? I said, I think she already knows she needs to brush her teeth, and she already knows she needs to take her books to class. She's the teacher of the class. I said, you don't have to tell her and criticize her again. I says, why don't you quit? He says, well, I need to tell her, she'll forget. I says, she's disassociating because you constantly tell her. I says, take the pressure off. She needs to be loved, cared for. Now, these are the list of 12. I'd like for you just to take this list and ask yourself the question, how many of these have I experienced that's damaged me? Where someone, for example, was angry and emotionally hurt me. Where someone was rebellious and damaged me, where someone neglected me, and go down the list and ask God, what if I got free from those issues? And then ask the Lord a second question, have I damaged someone else by these? Have I been the angry person? Have I been the person that was defiant? Was I the person that emotionally neglected? And go down the list, have I damaged anyone? Now, what we're going to do this week is, in a very practical way, I'm going to understand your heart. I want to care about your heart. And what we'll be doing this week is I'll be explaining, here's an issue. Here's how you resolve it spiritually. Like tonight, we're going to talk about emotional damage. How are people emotionally damaged? We're going to talk about bitterness. How do you forgive a person who's hurt you? How do you release them? How do you come to freedom from each of these issues? That's the purpose of this week. In Psalms or Proverbs, it says, above all that is kept, guard your heart. Your heart is the most important part of who you are. It's the part that loves. It's the part that cries. It's the part of you that experiences joy. It's the part of you that expresses worship to God when you're singing. That's why our hearts are probably the most important part of who we are. I want you to understand that we care about your heart. We care about what you struggle with inside. And God cares about what you struggle on inside. And God has the ability to reach into your heart through prayer and to bring healing to the pain in your life. So if you're struggling with anger, God has the ability to identify the cause of that anger and bring healing and peace so you don't have to struggle with that. God has the ability to understand why you're depressed and bring healing to that pain. And this week, as we share these sessions together, my desire is that you would experience healing in your personal life. And some of you might say, I have a spouse who's struggling and I know he or she is struggling and I want to care about that person. Or I have a child who's struggling, or I have a friend who's struggling. I want to encourage you, there is resolution for every issue, whether it's spiritual or emotional, that a person has been damaged in. And my prayer is that you would experience that freedom. What happens when people come to freedom? Can you imagine what happens if you have a husband who's angry, critical, self-focused, defiant, married to a wife who's depressed, felt neglected, not wanted, and they get free from those six issues? What would happen to that marriage? You say, well, it'd be different. It's actually going to be a relationship where they're connected and they find a honeymoon. Now, what's happened in sessions like this is this morning it looks like a full church. On Wednesday night, there's going to be a number of you who are so connected, it's going to look like the church is half empty because you're going to be sitting on one chair wanting to be so close to each other. It happens every week in these seminars. That's my prayer, is that you would find healing from Jesus and experience oneness and relationship that God has designed for you. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for the privilege of being